It's Sunday morning, and we are protecting military families on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. As always, we are joined by the owner of Brochue Law, Chris Brochue. Chris, how are we doing this Sunday morning?
Good morning, Casey. Doing great. How are you doing?
I am good. Glad to hear it. Let's talk before we get going today about your second opinion, the Brochue Law second opinion. We talk about it every week, but if you haven't heard it and you're a military family, you're going to want to know about it. Chris, tell the people about your second opinion.
Second opinion is for the military families and consumers that, you know, you have a question about your VA disability appeal, you have a question about your military life insurance, you have a question about your loan that you entered into that wasn't related to a mortgage, right? You have a question about Camp Lejeune. That's what we're going to be talking about today again. We've got a few episodes on Camp Lejeune now. We're trying to do a dive and cast that net as far as we can to reach everybody that we can, to inform them about their military family's rights. And if you have a question about your military benefits or your legal rights, go ahead and give us a call or send us an email at case@brochuelaw.com. That's Brochue, Bravo, Romeo, Oscar, Charlie, Hotel, Umbrella, brochuelaw.com. And what we'll do is we'll discuss it with you. We'll figure out what you currently have for military benefits, if there are any that you're leaving on the table, if you have a legal right to anything else, and potentially an avenue moving forward. If we decide to work together, what we would do is enter into a fee agreement, and basically our fee agreement is on a contingent fee basis. The only way that we get paid is if you get paid, and our firm advances all costs on behalf of our clients. So the bottom line is, if you have a, if your military family has a question about your legal rights or your military benefits, feel free to give us a call. We're happy to provide a free consultation. And please spread the word, right? I mean, everything that we talk about on this show, we're talking about military life insurance, military lending, VA disability, Camp Lejeune. If you know somebody that served, spread the word. They don't even need to call us. Just spread the word. The whole purpose of what we do is we are trying to inform military families and consumers about their rights, because we want you to fight back. We want you to get what you've earned. If you served or your family served in the military and you have these benefits available, please, please, please take advantage of them. File a claim. You've earned it.
Absolutely. And you heard him. If you need his help, case@brochuelaw.com, or give him a call, 904-201-1771. While you're on his website, by the way, check out the video version of the show. Thanks to Justin at Nova Productions. You can see me and Chris sitting here having our conversation on a Sunday morning. Chris, where are we going throughout the next hour? I know we're talking Camp Lejeune, but what specifically are we diving into this week?
Casey, there was one thing before that I wanted to mention. I've got a new website up, and it's specifically tailored to the questions that I receive. We've titled it the Military Resource Center. It's got a bunch of frequently asked questions. It's got a bunch of content related to all the topics that we always discuss. Brochuelaw.com. You're going to see at the very top, there's going to be a section that says Military Resource Center. We've posted some of the videos where we've talked about content. We've got written content, a bunch of different stuff, links, you know, on the life insurance side, what certain laws are depending on where you live. It's a great resource tool. Again, it's free to use. Feel free to use it, brochuelaw.com. Today, we're going to be talking about Camp Lejeune again. We've got that bill that is passed by the House and Senate. Again, they've had to kind of return to work on the financial component, but there was a small subset within that bill that needed to be kind of reworked. But we're here talking about Camp Lejeune, the toxins that were in the water. We're going to talk about and sort of talk about that more. Talk about the causal link, right? That's what this boils down to. And that will be the fight with the government. The government has admitted to contaminating water. And if they didn't admit, whether they knew or should have known, right, it was happening, they either delayed or denied telling people about it, depending on when you served. If you're at Camp Lejeune between 1953 and 1987, right? Military family, spouse, veteran, child in utero, civilian, those are the individuals that may qualify under this new federal law. The federal law is the Honoring Our Pact Act, and that's what we are talking about and the basis of this conversation. So we're talking about the contaminants in the water. We're going to talk about what happens if your loved one had passed away, right? Your loved one passed away in the 90s or 2000. You know they served at Camp Lejeune, and you know during that 53 to 87 time period, and you know that they passed away as a result of one of the cancers or diseases or illnesses that we've talked about.
Absolutely.
We can get into that comprehensive list again if you'd like, but just know if your loved one served there and passed away as a result of one of those illnesses or diseases, red flag, red flag, red flag. You should call an attorney. You may be entitled to compensation under this new statute. And then the other side of the coin is, what if you were the child of a veteran that served at Camp Lejeune during 53 to 87, and when you were a kid or when you were a spouse, you served there, or excuse me, you drank water there while your relatives served there, and you know, you're in your late 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s now, you've had these health issues and complications your entire life, they're not genetic, you don't know where they came from. There are a lot of those folks out there as well. This should be a red flag. You should call an attorney and screen that can screen your potential case, because again, you may be leaving a legal claim or a military benefit on the table.
And that's what we want you to not do. Don't leave anything on the table, and that's where Chris can help you. Now, if you're just jumping in and you're like, what water is he talking about? I have no idea. I wasn't here last week or a couple weeks before that. We'll give you just a quick reset of what it is we're talking about. If you will, Chris, just give people the Cliff Notes version of the overwhelming what this place is, what happened there, and then we can get into the what was actually in the water.
Absolutely. The biggest thing to know is that from 1953 to 1987, the military has recognized that there were potential contaminants, toxic, right, carcinogenic contaminants in the drinking water. And Casey, you've talked about it before. If you were bathing with it, if you were drinking it, if you were using it to cook food, right, there are a number of ways that it could have been ingested. You know, obviously, if you were training, you're probably consuming even more of it, especially in those hot North Carolina summers. So the bottom line is, if you serve between 53 and 87 and you have one of these illnesses, you can look back at what the government did over that period of time and some of the things that they were saying about it. Oh, don't worry, the water's safe to drink. It tastes funny because there are so many minerals in it. Drink more of it, right? No, there's no issue here. Perfectly safe, harmless to drink, right? There's no issue with that. The bottom line is there was jet fuel leaking into the water supply. There are service members that have made statements that they were instructed to dump the excess fuel, right, mm-hmm. into the ground, which would then seep into the water supply. There is evidence that some of the underground holding tanks were leaking or improper, and that caused environmental damage. These are all things that could be proved by soil samples taken by experts, right? These engineers that can dig down through the topsoil and figure out what contaminants are in the drinking water or around those tanks. That's really what this all boils down to, is there was fuel and contaminants that were just, it was not only in the water supply, but it was, had completely contaminated the main water supply at Camp Lejeune.
Absolutely. And well, I guess we can go into it now. You talked about it a little bit. Jet fuel, obviously, like when you talk about it or think about it, it's like, oh, I understand what it is. But what was really in the water in terms of the toxins and stuff like that? What do we know that was actually confirmed found in this water?
So some of the chemicals that were in there were TCE, PCE, benzene, some of the vinyl chloride. Some of these are, and I'm looking at a list. If you want to look at this list, it's a public document. It's called the Assessment of Evidence for Drinking Water Contaminants at Camp Lejeune. Specific cancers and other diseases. It's a 152-page report on what they found, the study that they found. It's available. Please Google it if you want to read more about it. And basically, again, it all relates back to that causal link. The government has admitted that there were contaminants that were in the water supply, and they didn't do anything to clean it up, and they covered it up. And then we've got all of these families, you know, a million plus people, potentially, conservatively a million people that may have been affected. And the causal link is, did that contaminated water cause this injury, this illness, this disease? Mm-hmm. And they have recognized that some of these diseases that we've mentioned in other shows, there's sufficient evidence for causation, meaning kidney cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, multiple myeloma, leukemia, liver cancer, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, breast cancer, male and female, bladder cancer, Parkinson's, kidney disease, esophageal cancer, rectal cancer, brain cancer, sclerosis or scleroderma, and cardiac defects. Those are some of the things that they related, and they say there's sufficient evidence for causation, meaning the government has admitted that this contaminant is in the water supply, and the experts that investigated it can link that that poisoned water from the jet fuel had carcinogenic or cancerous components, right? Harmful or toxic to humans that directly caused this injury or illness, these cancers, these diseases.
104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's news and talk, protecting military families on a Sunday morning with Chris Brochu, the owner of Brochu Law. If you need his help, 904-201-1771, or give him an email, case@brochulaw.com. Chris is always expanding how you can get in contact with him and the resources he has. So go to his website. You'll find a whole bunch of things that will be valuable to you as a military family. And you can watch a video version of this show on the website as well. Chris, this popped in my head. We've talked about your extensive history in science class, and we know it doesn't go much farther than high school. But I do have...
It's true.
Me neither, I'll tell you that. But I've wondered this, and I don't expect you to know unless maybe you've had someone talk to you about it. Obviously, you drink the water, it's bad. We get that. But I wonder, in terms of like shower water or like bath water, I wonder if that impacts certain diseases or injuries you may end up with.
And when we talk about somebody's science background, that's why we hire experts, folks, right? We can educate ourselves and read these assessments and understand them. But the reality is, to conduct the experiment, we leave that up to the experts. And your question is a great question, Casey. It really is. The effect of ingesting it, right, on a hot summer day versus, you know, bathing with it for an extended period of time, cooking with it. I'm not entirely sure, but I think that that would be a question that an expert could answer. I'm assuming that if you, you know, had water that you were cooking with that was, you know, say, for pasta or other things, I think that's a pretty reasonable argument. I mean, if you're showering and that water is getting into your skin, is it able to absorb into your skin? Are those toxins? Those are questions that I think that experts and scientists could answer and likely do have an answer to.
Yeah, I just think it's an interesting, I guess, part of this, because obviously the service member would be the one probably drinking the most water of the family, just by a guess, because you're obviously working and you're doing all these military activities. But I think about it from like maybe a child's point of view, where sure, they drink water. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm suggesting that they might have gotten more of an injury or illness from showers, which is something you do every day, versus the amount of water intake. So I guess it's just speculation on my part, but it is a fascinating part of this for me. I'll have to see where that goes. But how did we get here? Obviously, we know about the jet fuel. You talked about a little bit, but you mentioned soil contamination as well. But is this just something that it got into the ground and it was that simple? What do we know about how this actually happened?
Well, they know that there were underground holding tanks that were unequipped to or had not been maintained that were leaking into the water supply. And they know that there were service members that were instructed to dump some of that fuel, excess fuel, into the ground. And I'm sure over time we're going to learn even more. But the bottom line is there is one attorney that, hats off to him, pursued this and really made enough of a wake to make it a serious issue and get it in front of Congress. And it took him years. And his name's Ed Bell, and he's out of South Carolina. And what he did is he told the stories of the families that had been affected. And one of the stories that I remember him telling was about a husband that had served there that had died of leukemia, and his wife was living on an IV for 7 years. She was dying of leukemia, right? And her son was born without a limb. And that story of a birth defect in two individuals that had leukemia is not unique, although tragic. There are thousands of other families with stories of illness and disease. And Ed and his team, credit to them, they recognized this from, you know, a lot of clients that had called them, and they were the ones that really made this issue a national issue. And frankly, they uncovered what is likely to be one of, if not the largest, government cover-up in our lifetime.
I'm glad you got to that point, because I wanted to ask you this, and mostly as an opinion, but you know, feel free to answer it as you will. Without the work that they did, would we, and I say we as a society, as a people, but would military families be on the brink of getting something that they should have gotten in terms of financial compensation? But would we be on the brink of this without the work they did? Would this have been uncovered, in your opinion?
In a private right of action, no. I think that the information was available via a FOIA request, right? Freedom of Information Act. So there was the information's available somewhere. As far as a private right of action, no. Without their help, it wouldn't have been possible. Up until this point, the only remedy for a veteran or someone who served would be VA disability compensation related to their injuries or diseases. But as far as a private right of action, right, the actual right to sue the federal government as a service member or veteran, it did not exist. And most of those would have been protected by FERES or one of those doctrines. Remember, FERES, we've talked about before, you cannot, up until the Rich Stayskull Act, there was this sort of broad blanketed protection where you could not sue the military for medical malpractice. And FERES came out, it was a Supreme Court case, and it came out in the 50s, right around Vietnam, or excuse me, I believe it was the 60s, rather, excuse me. But I'd have to look back. But basically, what FERES established is that if you were in wartime, the whole purpose is, regardless of the date, if you're in wartime setting and, you know, you were receiving some sort of medical treatment during that wartime setting, you couldn't hold the military accountable for doing something improper during either surgical intervention or treatment or something like that. Rich Stayskull, great guy. I've met him and his wife over the phone, chatted with them a few times. He's got a very compelling and unique story. He was the one that moved the ball forward with the Rich Stayskull Act, which allowed sort of the military to create a fund under DOD to allow these service members to file claims for medical malpractice in a non-wartime setting. So if you were at, you know, a military hospital during the time period reflected in the Stayskull Act and somebody misdiagnosed you or you received medical care that was not up to the standard of care and you had a medical malpractice claim, in a non-wartime setting, the Stayskull Act would potentially give you the right to file a claim that previously would have been prohibited.
Absolutely. 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's news and talk. We are about to hit our first break of the show, but we've got more to do on this topic. There's more that we can dive into in terms of something that I've been wondering, Chris. I'm going to ask you this question. I don't want you to answer about it. I want you to think about it during the break, because I don't know why this popped in my head, but this is what we're going to talk about when we come back. You've talked about, obviously, the service member knows they served where they served and all of that, so they understand that. But there are children and there are wives in this. But I wonder, in terms of the children that potentially could even be now not super tight with their family, or I don't want to say estranged, but not always with their family, right? How will the government go about finding those people, or on the flip side, having those people find out that they now may be entitled to compensation for what they went through as a child? So I want you to think about it. We're going to hit the break, and when we come back, we'll get your answer to that opinion. I know you probably have some ideas of what you'd like to see and then what you think might actually happen. So we'll get your thoughts on that on the other side of the break. This is 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back on a Sunday morning, 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk, the 7 o'clock hour, and we've got 30 minutes to go on Protecting Military Families with Chris Brochu, the owner of Brochu Law and the Brochu Law Second Opinion. Chris, I asked you something before the break. We'll get into it in a second, but let the folks know that might be jumping in for the first time, or just let me know because I like hearing you talk about it, but the Brochu Law Second Opinion, what is it and what can you do for military families?
Second opinion, if you have a life insurance claim and you've submitted a life insurance death certificate and a beneficiary claim form and you don't receive your policy proceeds from your loved one's insurance company within 30 days, that is a red flag. You need to contact an attorney. They may be gearing up for a denial or they might have already denied your case. The other thing is, if you have a question about your military rights or legal your military legal rights or military benefits, we're happy to explore what benefits may still be available to you. And at the very least, just double check and make sure that the VA got it right or your VSO got it right. So if you've got a claim and the VA says, all right, this is the most you're ever going to get is 30%, and you think that you're entitled to more, give us a call. We'll look into doing a VA appeal. If you have a SGLI or VGLI policy that you're having trouble getting paid out, or a FEGLI policy that you're having trouble getting paid out, that's for any federal civilian employees, right? DOD or organizations like that. Give us a call. And, Camp Lejeune, that's what we're talking about today. If you have a question about Camp Lejeune, everything that we do is basically a free consultation. Well, I shouldn't say basically, it is a free consultation, but the only way that we get paid is if you get paid. So if we conduct a free consultation and we recognize that you may have a military benefit that you're leaving on the table or a legal right that you can pursue, what we do is we would decide, the both of us, if we'd want to enter into a fee agreement. Our fee agreement is on a contingency fee basis, which, that's essentially, we only get paid if you get paid, and we advance all costs on behalf of our military families and consumers.
So that is the second opinion if you think you might need his help. 904-201-1771. Or you can email him, casecase@brochulaw.com, which is spelled phonetically, Chris.
Bravo, Romeo, Oscar, Charlie, Hotel, Umbrella, brochulaw.com. It's kind of like brochure, but without the R and E.
There you go. That's a good way. to describe it. All right, Chris, I asked you before the break. If you're just jumping in, just on your way out the house this morning, listen to 104.5 WOKV or on the video version of the show. You probably heard the question, by the way, Justin, with Nova Productions hooking us up with the video version of the show on Chris's website. So go check that out if you haven't seen it. And if you're on the video version of the show, go check it out live on the radio. It's all kinds of ways you can listen. But the question I asked you, Chris, was this. The military service members, they know they served at Camp Lejeune. They know the water that they drank. But I was asking you about maybe the children that don't fully understand it, that may not have a great relationship with their parents, or unfortunately may have already lost their parents and don't understand kind of the situation that they may be in. And they all they really know is they have a illness that they don't understand why they have. So what I wanted to find out from you is, how will that take place? Will the government try to contact these people? Should these children and spouses go contact the government? I'm asking you if you know how you think it will play out to answer it, but if not, your opinion on how it should play out.
So you had two questions there. Does the government know who is there? Yes. Will the government notify people that were there? No. I don't think. That's my own personal opinion. I'd love to see them prove me wrong and have all of you get a letter in the mail. Hey, you drank water here. You may have a claim. I don't think that's going to happen. What I do know is this. If you've ever tried to get onto Mayport, and I've got the card to get on there as well, you go up to the checkpoint, right? You show your card. They let you on. They know who has access to that. They know who lives in their military housing. And I know from speaking with a client of mine who was a child at Camp Lejeune, he was at Camp Lejeune when he was 3 years old, drinking water there. They sent him a letter years later, more than two decades later, with a packet asking him to fill out the packet. They located him, they knew where to find him, and they knew that he was a kid that was at Camp Lejeune. I have no doubt in my mind that the military, if they know that the conservative number might be a million people that drank water there, I have no doubt that they know the civilians that were there, the spouses that were there, the children that were there, and certainly the veterans that were there. Because you can't get onto one of these bases without credentials.
Sure.
You can't live there, right? It's not like living in Jack's Beach and you move from Atlantic down to Neptune, right? I mean, they know exactly who's coming on and living there.
Yeah, and I agree with you, by the way. You feel strongly about that, and I believe you to be right. Now, you said, which I agree with you, that the government is not going to reach out to all the million people. Is that, in your opinion, because that's just a lot of work, or is that we don't necessarily have to compensate everybody if we don't let them know what happened?
Well, I wouldn't get to conspiracy theory with it. I think that the government likely knows, based off of VA disability, especially the veterans that have filed, who's got these service-connected or sort of presumptive conditions from their service or during that time period. And I think that they know that if the veterans start to file claims or file lawsuits, the word will spread enough where maybe they don't need to notify families. But I do think that there are a couple of categories of people that are not veterans and are not civilians that maybe don't understand that they would have a claim. And here are the two groups that I would be most concerned that don't hear about their right: ex-spouses and children. And the main reason is a spouse, most of my clients on the VA disability side, their spouse is very involved. They're helping with the claim. They're helping with a statement from a loved one, right? Caretaker statement. But if along the way a spouse separates or is an ex-spouse, their loved one has died, and they have these illnesses, they may never hear about that they could file a claim. Same with your example of the child earlier.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about that. In an ex-spouse situation, or really any situation, I had this written down, and I'm half joking, but I'm half serious. How should people find out about this? Like, word of mouth is obviously a thing, but in terms of somebody that may not talk to their ex-wife or ex-husband, and how would they ever find out about it? Is this like we run a commercial on TV? Like, how is this, do we let the masses know, besides like me and you talking on the radio about it, that there's up to and potentially more than a million people that may have a claim here that literally have no idea?
I think you're going to see the radio ads and the TV ads and, you know, the usual companies that are going to be marketing. But again, most of those companies, they don't actually represent people. They're not taking these cases. They're going to sell the lead to some firm or something. So for us, the biggest thing that I can tell you is this. If you have a story, I want to hear it. Give me a call. And even if you don't want to file a claim, I want to hear about what you remember. Were they, when you served at Camp Lejeune, were they dumping fuel? If they weren't, tell me about it. If you think that there's no way this is connected, I want to hear your story too. I'm not only interested in hearing the story of individuals that have suffered illnesses and diseases. If you disagree with this, give me a call. Let's talk it out. And the other part is, I want to hear your story, your time period. And if you know of somebody that was there that you're friends with, tell them about it. You don't need to tell them to call me, but call them up. Tell them, hey, I think that this law may provide a private right of action for you. You may be able to file a claim. You should look into it. That is the best way to spread the word. I know that it's going to be intriguing to click on the Facebook link that you see come across your feed, or the ad on YouTube, or the whatever. But a lot of times, the best way to find a law firm is to ask your fellow veterans or your service members, or maybe somebody in your family, who do you use for your VA disability? Who did you use for this claim? And if it's somebody that they've gotten results with, that might be someone you want to call. But at the very least, and this is what I tell all of my clients or potential clients, please spread the word. Please spread the word. You don't need to be passing out my information. I don't want that. All I want is for our service members and military families to know that they have this right. And what they decide to do with it is up to them.
Absolutely. And I got a couple more parts of this I want to talk to you about. But before we go any further on 104.5 WOKV Jacksonville's News and Talk, what should people be looking for if they hear Camp Lejeune? They're like, oh, wait a minute, that sets off a red flag. What are some of these illnesses that people could be looking for? That's like, wait a minute, I might need to give Chris a call.
Any cancers, that's the first starting point. Bladder cancer, breast, cervical, esophageal, kidney, lung, liver, ovarian, you know, any cancer that you've been diagnosed with, if you know that you were drinking water at Camp Lejeune, or you think that your loved one who is a Marine or a sailor was stationed there and you might have been a kid there, you got to look into it. Leukemia, multiple myeloma, Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, those are all on that list as well. Birth defects, female infertility, miscarriages. It's extremely heartbreaking when you hear the story. Ed Bell, the attorney that brought this forward, had talked about it. I heard him talk about it. Amount of child grave sites that they had. They actually had several cemeteries that were just for children. Absolutely heartbreaking, and it was not isolated to that area. There was obviously an issue with the drinking water, which is why there were so many children and infants that died there.
Yeah, it's absolutely heartbreaking, as you put it, and it's definitely a good way to describe it. Let's talk about this part of it. We talked about this in break a little bit. There was a time period where Camp Lejeune was a spot that you pretty much had to go if you did basic in certain areas. Explain to me a little bit more about why that was and why so many people ended up at this location.
What I've heard from the clients that I've represented on other claims that were, you know, either living there or going through Camp Lejeune, that base, was that at some point, I'm pretty sure for most of them that I've discussed this with, it was the late 70s, early 80s. And if it was before that, I mean, let me know. But basically, once you go to Parris Island and you finish boot camp, your first stop for your training would be Camp Lejeune. And most of the things that you have to remember about these types of cases, you don't need to have been stationed for 4 years at Camp Lejeune to have a claim. If you were there for 4 months and you were drinking water there for 4 months and you developed an illness or disease, you may still have a claim. From my understanding, once you finish Paris Island boot camp, your next stop during one of, you know, at least one portion of that 53 to 87 period, your next mandatory stop was Camp Lejeune.
It's crazy. And you talked about it a little bit there, but let's go deeper into it if we can. It didn't take long for these things to potentially happen. Like you said, you could have been there a couple of months. You could have been there years, obviously. But I believe in a previous episode, you told me it had to be a 30-day stay, right? Was that?
I believe so, yeah. I believe, you know, stopping in for a weekend, because you've got to prove, ultimately, and we always talk about this, you've got to prove the causal link. You've got to prove that the toxin caused the illness or injury or disease. And, you know, the causation is going to be the major issue here. Did this toxin cause this harm? You've got to be able to link the two. And I believe that the statute does a job of laying that out and who may qualify. And those will all become issues in litigation, right? You're going to have an expert or a set of experts that are going to talk about the types of toxins, the type of injuries, illnesses, how they link up, who's affected. Well, those will all become major issues.
Yeah, and let me ask you this. This is a fictional scenario that I'm going to present to you, but it's fascinating to me because you said in terms of somebody that went and visited a friend or something for a weekend, they don't count. We just talked about it. But let's say you get that call. You're like, hey, I visited a friend there on multiple weekends, whatever, and now I have this illness, and like I was there under the day. Like, is there anything you can do at that point to try to fight for this person?
I'll use it. So with that example, I'll use one that I think is really interesting that may be applicable sort of in a different way. Let's say that your parents were living at Camp Lejeune and you were a child in utero. And for 5 months, 6 months, your parents were living on Camp Lejeune. Obviously, your mother would have been drinking water, right, throughout her pregnancy. But you were then born off base and your family moved off base. So you technically, although you were in utero, you never actually consumed the water yourself. Technically, under the bill, that individual would have a claim. Let's say, for instance, that same child in utero was born without, they were only born with one arm. That would be the type of birth defect because they didn't, you know, obviously consume the water, but they were in utero, and that water would have likely caused that birth defect based off of what we know.
I got you. 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. A couple minutes to go on this Sunday morning with Chris Brochu, the owner of Brochu Law, and we are talking about the situation that is finally developing with the water at Camp Lejeune and how there could be some well-earned justice, I guess you could say, with that. Chris, let me ask you this. You mentioned this to me a couple of weeks back when we first started talking about this topic, and you said this is something that you're happy you got the ability to help people with before this started, because there's been other law cases and such that you couldn't really help people with because you didn't get in on it before it started. You follow me here?
Right. So the biggest thing is that the Camp Lejeune bill, it took years for Congress and for Ed's team to get it together. But now that we're at a point where it was passed by the House and Senate before all of the things with the recent, you know, financial portion that caused it to get kicked back, the main thing is that those families are finally receiving justice. And on some of the other issues, getting in on the front end just means that you are able to help basically establish the story, establish the causation. You're not jumping in years and years into the litigation when most of this is done, most of the bellwether trials are done. And I am always looking to help military families and consumers with different types of cases. And I talk about it all the time. It's one of those things that, to me, there's nothing more empowering than getting someone justice. And for justice in what I do, that means money, right? Because we can't ask the judge to put some corporation or some insurance company in jail. That's not what we do, right? Our justice is in the form of money. And that phrase has always stuck with me from a book I read written by Jerry Spence. He's a civil trial lawyer. He did criminal trial as well. But justice in the civil realm is money. That's all we can ask for. And in this particular case, not only is it disgusting that the government covered this up for so long, but all of these families that have dealt with this, they've earned their day in court. And it's truly a privilege to be able to represent some of them and to have some of them that want to be represented by us. The firms that I work with on these cases are incredible. The amount of time and money that goes into this type of case is robust, and there are a lot of moving components. So the courage of Ed and some of these firms to take on these issues are truly remarkable, and I respect the hell out of those guys.
Couple minutes to go. Chris, I'm going to ask you for your opinion on one more thing, but it's mostly how you feel. And since I've known you, since the first conversation we had, you've told me how important it is for you. I mean, you built your whole law firm around representing military families. So you are now in a spot in your career where this is a massive case, national case, millions of people involved. Obviously, you're not going to represent millions of people, but you are going to represent some people in this. How does it make you feel knowing that you're in a spot now that you may be able to bring people justice that they've been looking for 20, 30, 40 years?
It's empowering, because most of the time you have these stories and people are left out in the cold. They're left kind of disenchanted against whoever's treated them wrongly. In this case, it's the government. And they may not see their day in court. A lot of the individuals that may be able to bring claims, it might be their estate or their loved one, because they've passed away and they never got justice, but maybe their family can. So just truly a privilege. And I'm looking forward to getting some of these cases in litigation and being able to tell the story, because the story is the most powerful part. The science, the contaminant, the cover up, all of that is part of the story. But it's the tragedy that the families are living with on a daily basis that is the story, right? It's the client that Ed talked about that he has that is living with leukemia for 7 years, and she's been on IV drip for 7 years. It's her child that was born with a birth defect without a limb, right? It's those family stories and tragedies that need to be told, and they deserve to be told. And frankly, I hope as many of them file claims as they can and receive justice. You're right. We're not, my firm and all these other firms, it's going to take an army to bring these claims, no pun intended, because of the fact that there are almost conservatively 1 million people. Firms can't represent 1 million people. They could try, but I don't know how effective it would be.
Sure.
So I don't think you're going to see firms taking on 30,000 of these cases. I could be wrong. I think you'll see firms with a large caseload, and you know, it's just going to depend on the calls. We work with firms all over the country. We'll see how many clients end up wanting our assistance, and we're happy to provide it. And even if you have questions about it, give us a call. We want to hear your story. We want to hear what illnesses, how this has affected your family, when you served, what you know. We want to try to connect the dots, because that's how we're going to be able to prove this causal link.
Absolutely. And my favorite thing you said there was you want to tell the stories, which I think is why people in my position get into a business like this. But now you're having the opportunity for you to let people tell their stories and have their day in court, which they've so wanted for a long time. Chris, if somebody needs your help in this scenario or any scenario, give them your contact information before we get out of here on another Sunday.
Give us an email at case@broshulaw.com. That's case, C-A-S-E, at Broshu, Bravo, Romeo, Oscar, Charlie, Hotel, Umbrella, case@broshulaw.com. Or give us a call, 904-201-1771. We're happy to speak with you. We want to hear your story. If you have a question about anything else unrelated to Camp Lejeune, VA disability, lending, housing, any other military topics that you have a question about, your legal rights or benefits, please give us a call or send us an email. We're happy to speak with you and provide you a free consultation.
That is Chris Brochu, and I'm Casey Kurtz. Thanks for joining us on another Sunday morning. Thanks to Justin and Nova Productions hooking us up with a video version of the show. Check it out on Chris's website, brochulaw.com. That'll do it this week. We're back next week. Chris, thanks for joining me. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Casey.